Did you know that there are social spiders? Realistically, most spiders are solitary, cannibalistic predators. Although maternal protection of eggs and newly emerged young is fairly common among the arachnids, extended maternal care and extended interaction, aggregation, and group living are very, very uncommon. Less than 1% of all the spiders are social, so we're talking on the order of 40 species. What are social spiders? They're not like the social insects, or the bees, wasps, ants, and termites, where a single adult female does all the reproduction and everyone else in the colony are sterile workers. Unlike the Hymenoptera, bees, wasps, and ants, where young are essentially incapacitated little maggots that need to be taken care of, young spiders are to a large extent able to fend for themselves. But instead, sociality in spiders appears to provide major benefits to the members living in the groups. These include a number of things: reducing the risk of predation, sharing the energetic costs of producing large silk webs, filling up big empty spaces between trees that individuals could not do, and then most importantly, they're able to capture much, much larger prey than solitary individuals could capture. Imagine a web where you've got little tiny spiders the size of my fingernail that have something large like a dragonfly fly into the web, and you can have 30 spiders jump onto the dragonfly and attack it and pin it down and kill it in a way that an individual spider wouldn't have a chance at all of doing it. So cooperative prey capture and then sharing of the prey, especially for the younger spiders, appears to be incredibly important. But one of the other things to keep in mind is that sociality for spiders appears to be pretty difficult to achieve. Spiders are ultimately predators, and the costs of living peacefully with other cannibals is a difficult thing for many of the spiders. My own research has been on different aspects of group living in the arachnids. In Mexico, on my postdoc, I studied how spatial position in social or colonial orb-weaving spiders affected their prey capture success and risk of predation from wasps. What I found was that an individual's position in the colony had huge effects. Spiders on the periphery of the colony got far better food, but they were also at double the risk of predation from wasps. In addition, it depended on the size of the spiders. Large spiders on the periphery of colonies were at far greater risk than small individuals. So small individuals would be born in the center of the colony, move to the outside of colonies where they were able to eat lots of food, grow rapidly, and then they would start to move into the center of the colonies. Most recently, I've been looking at mother-offspring dynamics and sociality in amblypygids. Amblypygids are predaceous relatives of spiders, also arachnids. Now, most reports of amblypygids are that they're solitary and in fact have very dramatic fights and in fact quite impressive courtship behavior that lasts for a long period. But my research has shown that the amblypygids have very prolonged and very friendly mother-offspring associations that last for up until the animals reach sexual maturity at between 11 and 13 months. The siblings interact frequently with one another, touching each other, and appear to be greeting one another with very little aggression. Unlike many of the other social spiders, they don't share prey, but they probably derive benefits by living in groups, in avoiding predators, and perhaps some sort of a warning system. I'm really not sure, but the social interactions in these amblypygids are absolutely fascinating to watch, and it's clear that they like to group together, which you can see very nicely. The social spiders all share a number of characteristic traits. They all have prolonged associations and tolerance for their conspecifics. All of the social spiders have a strong tendency to aggregate together. Typically, there are overlapping generations of kin, so that the mothers are alive and interactive with her offspring as they develop. They have cooperative prey capture and prey sharing. Additionally, there's a lack of a colony or family identity, or some sort of an olfactory cue, which tells the spiders that individuals are part of their group or part of another group that they wish to exclude. All social spiders make silk webs. What is surprising is that the webs are produced even in families that otherwise never make webs. For example, most of the lynx and wolf spiders are solitary. They never build webs, and they're spiders that are either sit-and-wait predators or they chase down their prey. But the point is, they don't rely on webs to capture their prey. They don't even make the webs. But in the few social members of these two families, they build webs. Usually, the social spiders are very inbred, so that members of the colony are very closely related, and there's very little genetic variability in the colonies. These traits describe the social groups of all but one of the social spiders. The one totally atypical social spider is the huntsman spider from Australia, Delana cancerides. Delana are social spiders that live in groups of up to 300 individuals under the bark of dead trees. I am incredibly fortunate to be working on these atypical social spiders. I'm working in collaboration with my Australian colleague, Dr. David Roll of the Australian National University, on these spiders. As I mentioned to you previously, you may have already seen Delane in the movies when they starred in Arachnophobia. This huntsman is remarkably different from the other social spiders in many important ways. Like all of the other huntsman spiders, Delana don't make silk webs. You may be thinking, what does the presence of webs matter? Well, in the other spider, webs are terrifically important to three important aspects of social living. First, the webs facilitate communication among the spiders. Given that all the spiders are very attuned to vibrations, they're able to use the webs for vibratory communication among members of the colony. They're plucking away at one another. Communication is important for sharing information that a predatory wasp is flying around the web, or that a large prey item like a grasshopper has landed in the web. Second, the webs allow groups of spiders to communally attack large prey. The web helps entangle the prey and provides a common platform for the spiders to work from. Third, the web delimits a communal area where the spiders are all living and interacting. Remember, silk is expensive to produce, and when many spiders work together to build the colony and its frame lines, there are many energetic benefits to this group living. So, without a communal silk web, Delana need to communicate and capture large prey differently. As my research has shown, Delana turn out to have an extremely complex behavioral repertoire. They have many ways of communicating without relying on the web. There's quite a bit of leg entangling, dances around one another. The males will even thump on the bark, loud enough for us to hear. Even without the webs, the spiders are capturing prey, sometimes communally, but very, very often, large groups of young are sharing prey with one another. Unlike all of the other social spiders, which don't seem to have any kin recognition or any sort of a colony recognition, in most social spiders, it's very easy to catch spiders from 15 different colonies, put them in together, shake them out, and they'll form a colony together, apparently without caring at all. Given the aggression of Delana to intruders, it's very surprising to find that Delana are quite outbred. Delana are some of the most outbred of all the spiders, not even the social spiders. Delana aren't mating with very closely related individuals like the other social spiders, but they're mating with totally unrelated males. This didn't seem to make sense, given the behavior that had been observed, until I had been studying these huntsman spiders in captivity for some time. To my surprise, it turns out that adult males are very readily accepted into the colonies. It's the females that aren't accepted into the colonies. Even more surprising is the relatively complex mating system of Delana. To a large extent, mating in social groups has not been studied, because in most of the other social spiders, there's a sex bias in the individual. So there may be one male to 50 females. Not so in Delana. In Delana, it looks like there are maybe 60% males to 40% females. So this mating system is kind of odd. The spiders mate for many, many hours, and the females will mate with many different males and mate with them repeatedly. For spiders, this is fairly unusual. So I'll tell you, at any given time in the fall semester, my spider lab seems like there's just one big orgy going on. Now, I want to make clear that it's my spiders that are having orgies in my lab, not my undergrads. Probably the most interesting aspect of social behavior in these huntsman spiders is found in the many different kinds of social groups that are found in the field. In many groups, single adult females start their own colony with their youngsters, and they have multiple clutches of young. But in other groups, it looks like sisters are staying with their mother in their natal colony. These multiple female colonies can be very peaceful, with several sisters sharing for care of egg sacs and helping with the many clutches of young. But in other colonies, these sisters may have lived together peacefully for some period, and then suddenly, right about the time that they become sexually mature and males start moving into the colony, they become one female, one dominant female becomes very aggressive to her sisters, and then one by one starts killing them. Again, this is totally unique to the social spiders, but is found in some ant species. So Delania is a particularly interesting spider because of some interesting comparisons to social insects, particularly the ants, and how they differ from the other social spiders. Because Delana are so unique and doing things so differently than all of the other social spiders, Delana are turning out to be an absolutely marvelous model system to study many aspects of social evolution and constraints on how individuals make decisions about when the costs of living in a group outweigh the benefits. The flexibility in the social behavior of Delana turns out to be especially informative about the evolution of social behavior. I believe that the spiders are on the cusp of sociality, and to some extent, they're still working out the mechanics of what benefits individuals the most. Whether an individual should try to defend a colony site on her own and simply rear her own young, or whether an individual should make concessions and live with her sisters, but risk being killed later in their life cycle. It's not clear, but whatever is happening in these Delana colonies is certainly very, very interesting. When I began teaching spider biology, I just did not realize how magical spiders seem to so many people. Spiders seem to evoke a combination of interest, horror, and curiosity in people of all ages. My feeling is that because animal behavior is particularly accessible and appealing to non-scientists, natural history and behavior may serve as gateways for students to become interested in the sciences. The general fascination with spiders provides a wonderful opportunity to use the biology of these interesting animals as an entree into science education for elementary and middle school students. In fall 1998, I started the Spider Outreach Program, Eight-Legged Ambassadors for Science Education. In the first 6 years of this program, we've talked to over 240 groups and reached over 8,000 people. Through this program, Cornell undergraduates, and to a lesser extent, Cornell graduate students, go into local classrooms to give enthusiastic, interactive talks about spider biology. To enhance the talks and encourage hands-on learning, the Cornell students always bring in many live tarantulas, crickets to feed the tarantulas, display cases, and striking posters to illustrate their talks. My goals for the Spider Outreach Program, Eight-Legged Ambassadors for Science Education, were threefold. First, to enhance the local K-12 science education with interactive, informative outreach talks by talented undergraduate scientists. Second, for Cornell undergrad and graduate students to gain practical experience effectively communicating information in a classroom setting and to help them discover the pleasures of outreach. The Cornell students have loved working with the students and have developed infinitely better public speaking skills. My third goal has been to provide teachers with resources. Because the outreach program helps instill enthusiasm for biology, scientific inquiry, and spiders, the teachers have taken advantage of this curiosity to fuel library research, web searches, story writing, poetry, reading, math, and social studies throughout the area. If you're interested, I've got my webpage that has many of these same resources listed. As it turns out, the Spider Outreach Program has been surprisingly successful at reducing arachnophobia. I keep hearing stories about kids who were terrified of spiders before the talks, but by the end of the talk were feeding the spiders themselves. The idea is that real interactions allow the children to break phobias before they develop. I've made a point of especially targeting little girls so that they realize that in many ways, it's cooler to be a scientist working with creepy crawlers than screaming about them. All I know is that spiders are considered to be very cool and are appealing creatures in Ithaca, New York.